Hey everybody, welcome to another week of the Soccer Thread Podcast. I am Dan Schrader. I'm in Portland, Oregon. We have no Ryan Palmer this week. He is out of the studio, out of the country, doing big things.
He's on a mission to find Gareth Bale, wherever he may be.
He's walking and looking in every nook and cranny on the Welsh coast for Gareth Bale. spreading the Soccer Thread Podcast love across the world.
Love it.
I'm going to be real breathy this week. I'm getting over a little cold. I went to a Timbers game last night and cheered more than I should have. And then I went to a bar after that and yelled to try to talk. And so I'm just going to go real sexy this week.
And I love going to bars and yelling. It is one of, you know, it's as I get older, it's one of the things I appreciate more and more.
You know, so I feel like I haven't been to just like a bar in a long time. I feel like I'll go to like brew pubs or restaurants, but this was just a bar and we were out on the back patio and there were people smoking and I was like, man, I've not had this experience in years and I don't really miss it.
Yeah. Dan's big day out.
It was a big day out.
Lads.
That was, it was Carson Gorky in town. Got to see him. So what are you going to do? Go home and go to bed? Nuh-uh.
Can't do that. With
Carson in town.
He's still living that young life where he goes to bars all the time.
He is. He goes and hangs out with smokers. Mike Samuelson is in Minnesota.
Yeah. I'm not adjacent to the new Soccer City USA, but I think after Minnesota United's double victory over Portland, we need to do some reassessment of what is Soccer City USA. And I'm going to go ahead and just nominate St. Paul, Minnesota. Home of the Loons. I think, you know, two wins within 4 days, you automatically get the title. I'm pretty sure that's how that works.
It's a title belt situation.
I mean, I don't know, Colin, you could be the arbitrator on this one.
Yeah, I agree. It's a title belt situation. Next team to beat the Loons. That's officially Soccer City USA.
That's lost this weekend.
Frisco, Texas now, which is actually where the Hall of Fame is. So that kind of adds up.
Back home. Soccer's coming home.
we'll get on to the Loons and the Timbers a little bit in the emails, I think. Colin Smith is not in the swamp, somewhere else.
Yes, I'm in Mashpee, Massachusetts, better known as Cape Cod. I'm looking out the window right now at a little pond. It's glorious out here. It's glorious. I've been to the beach. I've been in the pool. It's a wonderful family weekend. You should all do it. Retreat. Take a retreat. But you can still find time to pod on your retreat. That's all I'm saying, Palmer.
I've been taking a retreat for about the last 2 months.
Yeah, exactly. And you didn't podcast on it. That's all I'm saying.
Podcasting right now.
Maybe they don't have internet in Europe. Maybe that's what's the problem.
Yeah, we'll have to check in on that.
It's very, very conspiracy theory stuff from Dan here. The no internet in Europe feels untrue.
Just look, empirical evidence over the last couple of months and travel habits of the podcasters suggests
it's probably no why internet. they still fax in the transfer requests.
Yeah, there's no internet over there. Phone lines are still really strong over there. Internet not so much.
Still using landlines.
Mike Samuelson, we got a ton of emails this week.
So many emails. Some people got so excited about emails they sent in more than one email, which is wild. First email, but encouraged. First email is from George Robbins. He's very excited, like a lot of people in Minnesota, about the double victory over Portland last week in the league and then during the midweek in the U.S. Open Cup semis. He wants to know, and as we mentioned, that, you know, the timing of this email is tough because Minnesota let up 5 goals last night and lost. But he wants to know what stats make you believe your team is real, is exceeding expectations, and is not just like a flash in the pan. Colin, I feel like you're the resident statistician on the pod. Why don't you give your take on this one?
Yeah, so there's two that come to mind for me. One, I think is Dan's favorite, which is expected goals. And that is, you know, whether your team is creating chances, basically. You might not be winning games because you know, you're hitting the post or whatever, you're getting unlucky, keepers are making great saves, but eventually those will go in if you keep creating chances. So if you're creating a lot of chances, that's good, and you're probably not a flash in the pan. Personally, I like to keep it a little bit more simple and go with goal difference. I think if you are leading the table, but your goal difference is you know, negative or close to zero, you should be worried. It probably means that you are winning all your close games, and it's very hard to consistently win all your close games. Things are going to eventually not break your way. And so I like to keep it simple with stats like goal difference and expected goals even.
So you're right. I do like expected goals. I also recently have really liked expected goal difference. So also taking into account what kind of chances you're giving up. I don't know if I totally agree that expected goals, I mean, I think it's okay to win by only a goal or two per game. You don't have to be Manchester City and win by five and run your goal difference up in order to be a solid team. I mean, I know these things correlate, but look at Leicester. They went an entire league season winning, you know, 1-0, 2-1, won the league.
Yeah. I mean, do you know that they didn't have the best goal difference that year, or at least one of the top two or three or four, right? It's not like they had the 15th best goal difference that year and then won the league, right? So I think this happens more in MLS, right, when there's more across-the-board parity that, like, the Union can be the top of the East and get blown out by Montreal. Well, if you're getting blown out by Montreal, like, you might not be LAFC good. Like, if you're getting blown out 4-0 and your goal difference then ends up being pretty minimal.
Yeah. All right. I'm gonna keep this moving because, you know, if we have a normal email length discussion for all these emails, this is going to be a 7-hour pod. And I think I speak for both our listeners and ourselves when I say nobody wants that.
Speak for yourself, Mike. I'm trying to do the 7-hour pod.
I'm speaking for myself, and I'm also speaking for your family.
My family time is over.
For the record, Minnesota have the second best goal difference in the Western Conference, behind only LA, who have plus 38.
Holy.
Minnesota at plus 7.
Wow.
There you go. Minnesota.
LAFC running away with this.
Very good at soccer.
You are for real, but you are not LAFC. You're not in their stratosphere or whatever.
A very distant second.
Yeah.
Very distant. Fifth in the entire league or something like that.
So yeah. That's about what I put
them at. They are well above the dotted line, even across leagues. They're doing fine.
Yeah, they're a good team.
And I should also mention, before we get a bunch of angry loon emails, that the team they put out last night was very much second string in their loss. Next email is from Ben Pearson. He sent in an email with a bunch of new rule changes for the Premier League this year. You know, probably the most noticeable one is the addition of VAR. There's a bunch of other kind of small ones. So he wants to know, you know, what our predictions are around some of the rule changes. A couple that he calls out are the manager being able to be carded, elimination of contested drop balls, which, I mean, that's just a terrible rule change. Nobody likes that. A couple other ones around sort of players in the wall, whatnot. Dan, anything jump out to you as far as the new rules for this year?
So one of them is that defending players can't be within a yard or two of, no, the other way, offending attacking, players, yeah. Attackers cannot be within a yard or two of defending walls, walls built of defenders. And supposed to be that if they are, it should be an indirect free kick to the defensive team, right? The offensive team loses their usually direct kick, and it's an indirect going the other way. I cannot wait for this to get called for people to flip out. Can you imagine if you've got, you know, whatever, Lingard or Rashford or somebody lined up behind a direct free kick? Because attackers are like psycho. They think every single free kick they get, they're going to bury, right? So you have him lined up, and then you've got one of his teammates getting a little too close to that wall, and all of a sudden the ref blows his whistle and gives a kick the other way. That guy's going to lose his mind, and I cannot wait. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, I don't think we might see it one time this year, that call, because, I mean, in these games...
I don't think refs will call it. They're just,
they won't call it, and I did notice that they're also putting down the...
Yeah, they're doing double lines.
Double lines, yeah, with the vanishing spray. So it's not so hard to not break the rule.
Yeah, this definitely feels like a rule that doesn't need to be a thing. I'm just gonna put that out there as my take. I mean, like, yeah, let them elbow each other. Who cares?
Yeah, totally. The real rule that doesn't need to be a thing for me is the VAR on PKs. We saw this in the Women's World Cup, but the encroachment, like every defender has always stepped over the line before the player kicks the ball, especially when they stutter step. And by the same token, the goalie always leaves his line before that ball is kicked, and doesn't keep 1 foot on the line, which they say it used to be 2 feet on the line. The new rule is 1 foot on the line. And that, you know, that means they're going to enforce it because two was a ridiculous rule. So if they really start enforcing this, this is going to be the worst thing. And we saw it one time this weekend. I think Declan Rice stepped over on a Sergio Aguero penalty kick. But this is the one to me that is actually going to drive me insane.
Yeah. Yeah. Pearson, also.
So
go ahead, Dan.
Substitutions. The players are supposed to go off the nearest point of the field now. Did that actually happen this weekend? I mean, that seems like a good rule to me to try to speed up the delaying in the end, you know, the injury time.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see how well that is enforced.
It definitely didn't always happen. And you can just imagine a situation where a player doesn't do that and then gets like a second yellow. And then all of a sudden you don't have a sub. You just have a player going off. And again, that one is just, people are going to really flip out if something like that happens.
Yeah.
It'll be amazing. I'm cheering for that.
Yes. Yeah. If you have a Premier League funny thing happening bingo card, that's got to be on there for sure.
It's got to be.
Pearson also wants to give a shout for Steve Bruce being the first manager with a red card, which, you know, it feels very possible.
Yeah, definitely. I think Pep's a low-key shout in there. He's the first manager to get a card at all, but he's definitely a ref abuser.
Yeah, absolutely. Next email is from Dave Hanold. This one hits a little close to home for me. So big news this week out of MLS circles is that this is going to be Wayne Rooney's last year in MLS. I think initially he had at least one further year in his contract, but he basically, due to what he says is family reasons, is going back to be the head coach, player coach of Derby in the Championship. So Dave's email kind of juxtaposes this with the lack of a sale from New York Red Bulls of Aaron Long. And, you know, he basically says that these older European players play in MLS whenever it's convenient with them. They leave on their own terms. Does the Rooney departure bother you guys the way it bothers Dave? Just kind of what are your general thoughts on this whole thing? Dan, why don't you go first?
It doesn't really bother me because I, in general, think that players should have the ability to, like, move when they want to. I don't love, players that get stuck, like Aaron Long, for example. So just from that point of view, it doesn't bother me too much. I also don't really mind that some guy that's a kind of a big superstar and is an older player now is leaving, because that's not really the type of league that I want MLS to be anyway. In my like personal hopes for MLS, it wouldn't be full of 30-something ex Premier League stars. I hope DCU. I think Ben Olsen had some comments about finding a South American 19-year-old that could do the same things as Rooney or something like that. I hope that's what they do, because that's, I'd rather watch that league.
Colin, any divergent opinions?
Look, I love Everton Academy product Wayne Rooney. I think he should be able to do whatever he wants. Unfortunately, he's not becoming the head coach there. I'll just correct that. They are sticking with their manager. They hired a new manager when Frank Lampard departed this offseason, who I can't remember, but is a club legend.
So he'll just be Cocu? Like player coach?
Yeah, he's like, correct. Yeah. He's an assistant coach or whatever, yeah. Philippe Cocu, I think, is the manager there. I agree with everything Dan said. I mean, I think the one part of this email to me that we're not talking about so much is Aaron Long. Aaron Long absolutely deserves a move if he can get it. We talked a little bit about that last week, and that would be good for the league. It would be good for the player. And I think that's really the story here, that MLS is doing a better job of moving guys on and enabling guys like Almiron to move. I think there's still work to be done there.
So yeah. So the Aaron Long thing, you guys talked last week about how the valuations from Red Bull and from West Ham, I think, were wildly divergent. It's interesting, though, that for selling on players like that, MLS would have taken 50% of the total fee. So if you do that math, New York and West Ham were actually in the ballpark, you know, that kind of 5 to 7 million range. Like, West Ham knew that it would take that much to replace him. New York knew that it would take that much to replace him to go find another player, right? And West Ham was kind of in agreement, like, that's what he's worth. So MLS is stepping on their own toes here by taking 50% of all transfers.
And that's a little bit MLS, like, right? That's the reason MLS does that or justifies that, is to say, well, that makes it harder for our players, U.S.-based players, U.S. men's national team players like Aaron Long, to move overseas. We want the best U.S. players to play in MLS. That props up our league. But I think that's kind of like an antiquated way of thinking.
It also means all your best players are going to move overseas when they're 16.
Yeah. Right?
So they'd never have to play in MLS.
And I think MLS is, I mean, you're seeing some evolution, I think, as far as selling players who are still kind of in their prime. It's a very slow evolution. But also, and not to get too much in the nitty gritty, but the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, is up this year.
Yep.
And I can imagine that, you know, kind of facilitating transfers is going to be one thing that's going to be near the top of that collective bargaining agreement.
Yeah, good point.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Point. I was going to say that a structure where you pay a fixed fee to transfer Aaron Long, like say you pay $1 million to transfer Aaron Long, no matter what you get for him, makes a lot more sense than paying a percentage of that total fee.
Yeah. Right? I mean, one thing also is you hear this a lot more in Europe, but like buyout clauses, and you almost never hear that when we hear about MLS guys moving abroad. And it seems like just in the past there haven't been buyout clauses in MLS contracts. And I don't know if that's because of the CBA or just because agents haven't been inserting it, but it seems like that's got to be something moving forward that the players are going to be pushing for.
Yep.
And that way there's less of this, you know, sort of back and forth of just like, look, this is what we agreed my value is, and they met it, and here we go. See you later.
I'm out.
All right. Another email from George Robbins, this time about his Hammers. Tough Saturday for George. I'm just going to go ahead and say that. His two teams shipping 10 goals. Brighter days ahead, George. Brighter days ahead. He wants to know about, you know, club captain, West Ham legend, Mark Noble. He's getting up there in age. I think he's 32 this year. And, you know, this is probably his last year as a starter. So he wants to get our thoughts about, you know, what you do when you have a club legend who, you know, is probably getting to the point where they're not an automatic first team pick, but they're still in that, you know, in that role, both probably as a locker room leader and designated as a captain. How do you kind of transition that on? You know, Colin, you probably have the most experience with this, with Everton Academy product Wayne Rooney coming back and being named a captain, but then kind of getting pushed out.
Or Leighton Baines, or Everton have a bunch
Phil
of players
Jagielka.
Like this.
Phil Jagielka is the one I was thinking of, actually.
So I mean, what's the best way to do this?
I mean, yeah, I think the best way to do it is to sign somebody who must be a starter, right? If you sign somebody above that player who, you know, gives the 32-year-old club legend a clear sign that, like, hey, this is you, but 10 years ago, it kind of makes it clear that his role is to support the player or to play a different role within the team, to be, you know, leadership presence in the locker room, maybe a sub player, maybe, right, if you're a third center back like Jagielka has been for the past couple of years for Everton, you know you're going to get opportunities when one of those two guys gets hurt because you're subbing at two positions and, you know, you're going to fill in cup games and things like that. You're going to get games, but you're just not going to be the first choice. And I think that there's a lot of guys who can transfer into that kind of role. It's not like being a backup keeper where you're just never going to get games.
Yeah.
So I don't think you should necessarily feel like a guy like Mark Noble needs to be like pushed to the fringes and feel bad about himself. Like it's kind of a natural progression. If you come in and sign a player in his position for £40 million, he knows that, you know, that his role is changing. And I think players, generally speaking, in the Premier League actually take it a lot better than somewhere like the NFL or the NBA.
I think it also depends on like the individual personality there. I mean, it seems like, I don't know Noble very well, but just kind of based on the player he is, you'd imagine that he could take that. But some guys, you probably just have to cut the cord and just sell them or get rid of them, you know, because they won't respond very well to being demoted or having a new young guy brought in.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of like you can just say, "Hey, we're bringing this young guy in, and we'd love for you to stay. What do you want to do?"
Yeah. Yeah, just kind
from
of
the fan perspective, I hope that the West Ham fans are able to just really appreciate whatever Mark Noble's got left, even if he's not the best player on the pitch. You know, the Timbers now have Diego Valeri, and he's not always amazing every week anymore, but it's just such a pleasure to get to have a club legend that you still get to watch play. So, you know, I hope they treat Mark Noble right and don't get too much on his back as he declines.
Yeah. Mark Noble not producing the same kind of on pitch beauty as a Diego Valeri. You know. Still, maybe putting in a good tackle once a week or something. But yeah, I definitely agree. It is nice when you can have that kind of mutual uncoupling. I believe is the term that we use now. but yeah, good question, George. Next question is from Burj. Actually, before we get into his round of questions, he would love for us to have a Palmer NWSL segment each week, just based on the amount of prep that he did for the World Cup this summer. And I could not agree more. Palmer is going to be absent for a couple weeks, but hopefully once he's back, we can get Palmer's NWSL corner up and running because, yeah, he was fantastic this summer.
We need more Palmer and we need more NWSL. I mean, it's a win-win.
The Thorns lost to the Tacoma Rain last week. It's not good.
It's embarrassing.
Ooh.
Little, well, it's embarrassing for the Rain that they're from Tacoma.
Cascadia Derby, and not looking good for the southern half.
Rough week for us.
All right, so Birch has a series of questions for all of us. Dan, it's probably no surprise that his question for you centers around the tough week for your Timbers, but kind of looking at Minnesota and Portland and the way they build out their roster and Burge, you know, kind of has some thoughts about, you know, different approaches that different teams are taking, you know, kind of bringing in guys from Europe, bringing in, you know, established guys from South America, bringing in young guys from South America, bringing in domestic talent, whether it's academies or sort of MLS also RANs. And he wants to get your thought. If you were the GM or director of player personnel for a new expansion team, how would you build that team? Which of these strategies would you use or what combination would you use?
I am not convinced that the way that MLS is currently structured, that a domestic academy is actually a great investment. You might hit a home run and get, you know, Burge mentions in his email, DeAndre Yedlin or Jordan Morris, Seattle guys that have been really good and have been worth years of investment in an academy just for a couple of years out of them. But if you look around the league, you don't see a bunch of guys that are worth millions and millions of dollars that really, it doesn't make sense to me that putting millions and millions of dollars into an academy is an obvious way to build a team. For me, you know, you take European guys that are good. That's kind of your fill out. But the best guys in MLS all seem to be South American. That seems like the market inefficiency that MLS teams should be trying to use. It's as simple, honestly, we have stable paychecks and a lot of these guys aren't used to that coming out of Argentinian leagues or Colombian leagues or wherever they're coming from. So you can lure guys up here by saying, look, you know, you might not make as much high ceiling, but quality of life is good. You're going to get your paycheck every month. You're going to be safe, your family, whatever. And that's how I would build my team. I'd go digging in South America.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, we mentioned LAFC earlier, and they're definitely cream of the crop right now. And their best player is Carlos Vela, who's, you know, kind of a later in his career. I think he's 29 or 30, Mexican player. So he's bounced around Europe. I think he started in Liga MX, but spent most of his career in Europe. And then, you know, probably their next best player is Rossi. He's a young South American guy. So that just kind of goes to what you're saying, Dan. And you know, behind them, they've got sort of a combination of domestic guys, South American guys. But
you're going to have European guys in there, you know. But I think in terms of, I'd rather have those guys be squad players, yeah. Rotation, support.
The top investments. Stars.
Yeah.
I think that makes a lot of sense. It's also kind of worth you know, this stuff does seem to fluctuate as the league continues to evolve. And like, you know, we mentioned a new CBA might mean different rules and player signings and things like that. So,
yeah, I'd also say that there's something to be said for depending on your geography. If you are the New York Red Bulls and you are drawing from suburban New Jersey, one of the all-time best U.S. hotbeds for men's national team players and great prospects like Tyler Adams, it makes way more sense to invest in your academy than if you are, I don't know, Kansas City or something. I don't know who would have the worst, maybe Minnesota or something like that. You just have less people, less youth soccer infrastructure before they get to the academy, all those kind of things. So I think there's a little bit of that, you know, to think about as well.
Yeah. It seems right now that with academy guys, you're either going to get a player who's like not, frankly, just not that great, like an okay MLS player, or if they're any good, they're going to want to be in Europe and you're going to invest a lot of time in a player and then, you know, have to sell them for not that much money because, you know, I think most European teams don't sort of appreciate American talent yet, or, you know, you just lose them for free. So I think it's a little tricky.
Or if they're really good, they'll Weston McKinney and he'll just leave the academy at 16 and they'll never get anything for him.
I mean, right. That's not completely true though, right? Like Alfonso Davies, what was his price? 15 million, 20 million to Bayern?
Yeah, but I mean, I think until we have, I mean, we've got one guy who's done that. Until we start seeing a pattern, then it's, I don't know, it's a difficult difficult pitch to make.
Tyler Adams would have gone for similar money if he hadn't been going to a sister club.
Maybe.
Yeah, whatever. Now, yeah.
It doesn't seem like there's a steady pipeline. My point is, you kind of hit the jackpot when that happens. You're not getting a player or two out of your academy every year that's going for any money.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure the investment is worth it.
Yeah.
I think you got to buy a ticket. If I were running an MLS club, I'd definitely have a strong academy. I agree with you, though, that if you want to win a game tomorrow, you got to go to South America.
Yeah.
His question specifically says 4 years, and I also actually don't think 4 years is enough time to build a strong academy. So.
Absolutely agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Burge's question for you, Colin, is about transfers. We love transfers. Mm-hmm. He's got a couple for you. So these are all around Premier League. So which transfer to a non-top six team do you think is most likely to be a big hit? Which non-top six team is likely to finish ahead of a top six team? So do you think we'll see a mid-table club breaking into that top six? And what is Everton doing paying £40 million for Alex Iwobi?
So these are just Everton questions then. Because which non-top six team has had the best signing is Moise Kean. There's no doubt in my mind about that. He's exactly the type of signing that we're asking MLS clubs to make from South America, except he's going from Italy to England. He is a 19-year-old striker with buckets of potential and not just potential. He's, you know, he's scored goals in Serie A. He's scored goals for the Italian national team. He is legit, and he's only £28 million in today's market. That's cheap, right? So I think that's the best signing. Whether he scores 20 goals this year or it takes him, you know, 2 or 3 years to get going is to be seen. But I think that's the signing of the summer for me. I still think that Everton, even though we only managed 1 point at Crystal Palace, have the best shot at getting into the top six. I think that's actually not because Everton will be especially great this year, but I think it's because both United and Chelsea have the potential to be awful by their own standards. Obviously United looked all right against Chelsea, but I don't put any faith in their ability to be consistent. So I think we've seen over the past maybe 5 years, like both of those two teams, and I'm not sure anybody else actually out of the top six have had, but alternatively Chelsea and United have had years where they've finished like something like 11th or 10th. And I think we could see either of those two teams implode this year. And so then I'll say Everton will be the best chance to finish top six. And the last question was something about Everton.
Iwobi.
That's terrible. I'm not a fan of that one. You know, again, you can see where the thought process is in that he's only 23. He's played something like 100 times in the Premier League, so he does have Premier League experience or is in some way Prem proven, which inflates his transfer fee. And he also fits a need for us at left wing. So we were, once we weren't going to get Zaha, we were willing to be price gouged, but there's no doubt there's some price gouging there, and he is not worth 40 million.
I'm instituting a new part of this podcast, which is the Colin Everton optimism meter on a scale of 1 to 10. I'm just going to say right now you're at a 10.
Yeah,
I've never seen you so excited about
absolutely.
Everton.
I agree.
I'm excited to be tracking this throughout the year.
Yeah, maybe like mid Bobby Martinez's first season. We signed Lukaku. I remember signing Lukaku on loan. I was sitting on my stoop in 9th Street waiting for my wife to come downstairs because we were late to something. And I got the alert on my phone. Oh, we signed Lukaku on loan. I remember the whole walk wherever we were going, explaining to her how big of a deal this was and how great it was going to be. So that was a while
ago.
Sounds
like a great walk for
her. Yeah, she's still with you. That's incredible.
I think she was probably on Instagram the whole time, but I was excited. Certainly have not felt this feeling since whenever that was, maybe 2013, 2014.
I'm just surprised that even after yesterday's draw against, you know, a Crystal Palace side who didn't look great, that you're still so excited. It shows to me that there's something really there in your heart that you believe in, which, I mean, I just don't know how to feel.
Didn't even start the new signings. We made more chances than they did. It's an away point. Yeah, I would have liked all three, but especially the one that Seamus Coleman should have put away. The keeper makes this ridiculous save on. It felt like we were the better team. It felt like that was just a bit of a unlucky and move on.
Man, it's a new day.
Feel like it's coming from your heart, which is crazy because it wasn't clear that you had one until about last week.
I think I don't know if it's chinchilla, but once you became a father, you've really turned over a new leaf.
It'll do that to you.
Yeah, it'll do that to you. I'm feeling all kinds of feelings.
Believing in the future. It's incredible.
I didn't even know there were these feelings existed. I had an inkling because I'm friends with Palmer that there were other feelings that I wasn't feeling. But it's interesting to be stepping into the uncharted territory myself.
That is very funny.
Love it. I do love it. 10 out of 10 right now on the hope meter.
Absolutely.
All right, so Burge's last question is for me. He wants to know my thoughts on Allianz Field. Went to my third game there already this week, the midweek U.S. Open Cup match. It's a beautiful stadium. I mean, I think LAFC's field, Bank of California, is also great, but definitely nicer than the new D.C. United field, definitely nicer than the Galaxy Stadium, so... Burge, I think you and everyone in Minnesota are very lucky to be going to that.
How that beautiful stadium. Is it? Is it so beautiful that you would get it tattooed on your thigh?
I don't think there are any stadiums, really anything in general, that I would get tattooed anywhere in my body. So no, it's not that beautiful.
All right, just
sorry.
Wow, coming from a guy that spent most of his youth on worldsoccerstadiums.net, I thought for sure we could get like whatever that communist one that seats 200,000.
I mean. A printout on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, yes, but not a tattoo. Burge also wants to know how pumped I am about the possibility of Mesut Ozil coming to DC United. That's been rumored to be happening this winter, and the answer is not pumped at all. I really hope that doesn't happen. So
check the hope meter, zero.
Zero. Very, very dejected right now about DCU. Burge also sent another email just kind of... really, really giving it to your Portland Timbers, Dan, and Burge. We're gonna have to pass on that one. We've kind of covered that already, but email was received. So
Burge also texted this week to call the Timbers a bunch of divers. His starting forward went out and spit on a guy this week. So you know, not everyone's a perfect team, Burge.
Yeah.
It all comes back around.
Not great. He did issue a very quick apology. So you know, we make mistakes, Dan. We don't make mistakes.
Oh, we. Wow. He's already Minnesota. Listen to that.
No, I'm saying we as humans, Dan.
Oh, okay.
He's already human, Dan.
I'm already human. Colin just got here. I've been a human for years now.
Years.
I'm just 10 months in.
thanks everybody for the emails. Really great stuff. keep them coming. Soccerthread@gmail.com. And yeah, as you can see, if you send an email, we will almost certainly read it or at least acknowledge its presence.
Thank you so much, listeners.
We got Premier League. We're back. This is the bread and butter. We don't have a lot of time left, but I do want to try to touch on every game and use those games just as an opportunity to do a little bit of freeform thought, maybe preview on each team. Since we haven't really done a preview. Liverpool kicked off the season with a 4-1 win over Norwich City on Friday night. Big win. Salah right on the score sheet early. Two golden boots in a row for Mohamed Salah. And gets right back out there again. Thoughts about this game? Except, obviously, just, you know, Liverpool picking up basically where they left off.
I mean, we kind of talked about what makes a team, you know, good or not, basically, and kind of the comparison of expected goals versus actual goals. I think this is kind of a good illustration of that, like, the beginning of this game, you know, Norwich had chances, Liverpool weren't looking great, and then Liverpool kind of get a fortunate own goal, and then they just pile it on, and Norwich don't make much of their chances, and all of a sudden it's 4-0 at half. And there's something about good teams where that kind of thing just seems to happen to them, and Liverpool definitely seem like they've got the momentum this year. They've got the mojo. I think City are probably still favorites, but just kind of looking at Liverpool without Sadio Mane, you know, probably their second best attacker, and it didn't look like a problem at all for them.
Yeah. So Liverpool are favorites for me. They look great. And I like Norwich because we'll get on to Aston Villa later, but Norwich are your replacements for Huddersfield Town. They are rolling with who they came with. They have not gone in and replaced their Finnish striker. They are just going for it with the guys that got them up from the championship and trying to play attacking football with those same guys. So will be interesting to see how that turns out.
They were knocking the ball around pretty well, especially before they went down a couple goals.
Yeah.
And you mentioned their Finnish striker, Timu Pukki. By far my favorite name in the league so far.
So good.
Not only a great name, but he also grabbed a consolation goal. So I'm going to be following Mr. Pukki throughout the year.
Grabbed a consolation goal, which Norwich celebrated as if it was a winner. Absolutely. Which I loved. Like, come on, we're here. We're at the dance. Let's have some fun.
I mean, that to me also shows that, like, team, you know, squad unity. Sort of unity. Yeah, thank you. Is high, and you know, this is not a team that's gonna fold immediately.
Absolutely,
maybe they're fold after a few months, but they're gonna give it a go.
Love it.
West Ham lost by 5 goals to Manchester City, failed to get on the score sheet themselves. Raheem Sterling with a hat trick. So Salah comes out, gets his one. Sterling says, we'll see about that. For me, though, actually, kind of interesting thing here is that Aguero started on the bench. I feel like Pep has been trying to replace Aguero for years. Maybe he's trying again here. Gabriel Jesus getting the start.
I just think that Aguero is going to be part of this team still. I don't rate Gabby Jesus that highly. And I think Aguero still has enough in him where he's going to get chances. We know he can finish. Maybe he's not as quick as he was, but I think he's still going to be the preferred starter. He's still going to get 15 to 25 goals this year.
Those thighs are still nice and big.
Massive.
I love these guys as a duo, like not playing together necessarily, although they could, but because Gabby Jesus is underrated, I would say, in that he runs and runs and runs and runs, whereas Aguero maybe not so much, but obviously is going to give you 20 goals every year. So I think that that's kind of like a nice gives Pep options kind of situation.
So there was some comment during the Liverpool game while they weren't making any subs, and somebody said, I forget if this was on the broadcast or I saw it on Twitter, something about Klopp obviously thinking that this is going to come down to goal differential, leaving the subs out there trying to drive it up. Did City go out and win by 5? I was like, well, maybe not wrong.
Man, if Klopp is thinking about that on the first day of the season, that's, I don't know, that feels an interesting way to go. Where do you guys think West Ham is gonna finish this year? They're, you know, perennially one of those teams that feels like they could be in the hunt for, you know, a European spot, or they could be, you know, fighting off relegation.
I think they're not so bad this year. Yeah. I think I said this last week, but it seems like they're building something now under Pellegrini instead of kind of cycling through managers and hiring people like David Moyes. Felipe Anderson, one of their signings from last year, is a really good player. And I think we kind of underrate the impact of players who are already at the club, but will still be getting better. So whether they're getting more used to the Prem or they're just getting older. And so I think he's one of those who will maybe have a really good year. And then, yeah, I think they've solved some of their problems. Okay, they didn't have a great striker. They went out and spent a lot of money at striker. I don't know if Hollerback is going to be, the solution there. I don't really know much about the player himself, but the same reasons I have optimism for Everton, and that we seem to be getting a little consistency and continuity and a sensible plan. You could say all the same things for West Ham. So yeah, I think they're going to have a better year than they've shown in the last two or three.
I think every team we've talked about, Colin has been really excited about this year, which I just don't know what to do now.
I think Norwich are going to be shit. I'm excited about them, like for them, but I think they're going to finish 20th.
I knew that Colin was a little bit excited about West Ham this year, or at least not down on him. But then the little P got subbed in the 65th minute, and I thought that would be the end of your excitement over West Ham.
Yeah, and he's wearing the number 9 jersey, and he had a chance right in front of goal and didn't score.
There you go.
So yeah, same old Chicharito, you know.
Bournemouth 1, Sheffield United 1, getting away point for the newly promoted Sheffield United.
Billy Sharp,
that's not a bad point. Bournemouth, you know, they were a solid Premier League team last year, so good for Sheffield United here.
Yeah, you talk about a celebration of a club acting like they just won the league. Billy Sharp is a club legend at Sheffield United. He scores this goal, it's like really like a scrappy tap-in, goal-mile scramble goal from 4 yards away, but it's in like the 88th minute to get the draw, and he runs over to his away fans and celebrates with everything. He's in the stands. It was beautiful to watch. The Sheffield United fans were so pumped. Definitely excited for this team. I don't think Sheffield United are going to make any noise this year. Got a couple Everton rejects sitting on the bench, but definitely a fun watch. And I don't know, just that's the kind of thing that if you watch that and you don't feel feelings, you're me before I had a kid.
For me, Sheffield United are the team that are most likely to go down. I don't know. I mean, I don't know much about anything, but I particularly don't know much about Sheffield United. But I don't know. They just don't seem like a team that has much to them.
Burnley get a 3-1 win over Southampton. Southampton have been struggling for a few years. This is not a good way to start.
Yeah, I kind of feel like this might be their year in a bad way.
And actually, both these teams, when I look at their rosters, I feel like they are really depending on the thing I was just talking about with players that we already have need to be getting better for us to get better. Kind of going with that Tottenham, Pochettino, Daniel Levy, just run it back. We stayed up, just run it back kind of approach. So yeah, that doesn't give me a great confidence actually in either of these clubs, but maybe less than Southampton.
Yeah. I mean, they were 16th last year, so not far off from relegation, and they didn't, like you said, Colin, they didn't really bring anyone in. I mean, I do kind of like their manager, Hasenhüttl.
Yeah. Hasenhüttl.
He seemed to be able to get something out of them when he came in last year, but I mean, at the same time, you can only go so far with talent, and it's just, I don't know, it just doesn't seem to be working.
David Wagner, Huddersfield situation, maybe. But yeah, I think that both these teams will struggle. But yeah, you know, it's the beauty of the Premier League that not everyone can go down.
Burnley get a 3-0 win and find themselves outside of the European, the UCL spots after 1 week.
That's tough.
A lot of big goal differentials in week one.
Yeah. Still ahead of Spurs, though, so, you know.
ahead of Spurs, right behind Brighton, only on alphabetical order, though, I think. So that's a tie break eventually. Crystal Palace, Everton, 0-0. Colin, you already kind of touched on this.
Yeah, I got
Everton go away, didn't play all their new players, getting away draw in the Premier League. You don't seem too upset.
No, I'm not upset at all. Yeah, I mean, what if you put this game on the calendar, we're going away to Crystal Palace. I'd say that we should win that game. But all things considered, yeah, it's not affected my 10 out of 10 hope rating.
Watford lose at home to Brighton and Hove Albion 3-0. I have nothing to say about this game.
I mean, can you imagine for Watford supporters a worse start to the season? You're playing a team that, you know, frankly, isn't particularly good, isn't, you know, particularly well favored at home, and you're just getting shellacked. I mean, it's,
and you scored the game winner. The first goal is an own goal, and it's not an own goal like, oh, it just deflected off the player. It's like a cross that Decore turns in past his keeper. And Decore, someone who Everton was rumored to be trying to sign or confirmed put a bid in for, I think, 38 million, rejected by Watford. They keep him, and that's what he does to them in the first week of action. Makes me feel like everything's coming up Everton. Hope 10 out of 10.
yeah, this is... I mean, it's funny, but that's already maybe a relegation six-pointer, and Watford just get crushed on it.
Yeah, Watford, I think, have some guys coming along. They did make a couple signings. I do like their manager, Javi Gracia. I think they'll be okay, but yes, you're right. Neither of those teams are, I think, going to be competing with the West Hams and Evertons and maybe Wolves and Leicesters of the top of the mid-table.
It is. I mean, just kind of looking at like some of the sort of expected bottom table teams, you have a lot of clubs that aren't like historically big clubs. And I mean, kind of what you're saying, Colin, but the opposite, like I wish we could kind of relegate like five or six of these teams. Cause I mean, there's a bunch of them that like, I don't think they,
you're just tired of Watford at this point.
I'm tired of Watford. Like, I don't think their ceiling is high at all. I mean, we're about to get on to Aston Villa, and like they lost yesterday. They played okay. But I mean, at least it's like a historically big club that you feel like under the right set of circumstances could kind of get back to becoming a big club again.
Yeah.
And with Watford, sure. You're just like, yeah, this team, their ceiling is just finishing 10th.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Tottenham get a 3-1 win over Aston Villa. Tottenham go down early. Aston Villa go up 1-0. Tottenham come back in the second half, late in the second half too. Kane gets a brace. Who knew that he scored in August? That's an interesting little a wrinkle from Pochettino.
So we should tell the Palmer story, which is that Palmer was watching this from a pub somewhere in an unknown location for the first 70 minutes. And those were the bad 70 minutes where Villa was still up 1-0. He left Spurs... you know, scored 3 goals right away. I think for the rest of the year, it's going to be very sketchy coverage of Spurs on the pod, because he's not going to watch any games, quite frankly. Well, he's going to watch even less soccer than he was before. Good for Spurs. I mean, it would have been pretty rough starting off their season with a loss at home to a newly promoted club.
Yeah, I mean, once Eriksen came in for Winks, like I never really liked Winks, and it was really crystallized yesterday that I don't think he's really good enough to play for Spurs. And I know that they've got Lo Celso, new signing, who didn't suit up yesterday. But for me, like, they need to hold on to Eriksen, because he's just such an improvement in the midfield. He was making things happen. He was dynamic. And it was really like a totally different game once he got on the pitch.
Yeah,
this.
I mean, I disagree with you on this. I think that they need to play an attacking player instead of Harry Winks. Harry Winks, for me, more of a all-arounder type. Eriksen, very much a 10. But they have other options in that spot. They can play Dele Alli there. They can play Lo Celso there, obviously. It's not really, to me, like, if Eriksen goes in January, I don't think Palmer should be panicking.
This win for Tottenham... you know, not great, whatever, struggled for 70 minutes. But in a way, I actually think it gives me some confidence that they can go and win games that they don't feel great in. You know, obviously 5-0 to Manchester City, that's much more convincing. But this somehow is kind of a good sign for Tottenham, I think, which is obviously a shaky argument to make. And I'm going to make the opposite one about Arsenal squeaking out a win against Newcastle. But, you know, I feel like this is okay for Tottenham. Maybe not as good as they wanted, but they got their 3 points. They can move on.
Yeah,
they,
I mean,
they learned about things that weren't working.
The Dembele looked great, I thought.
Yeah. He looks good. They were missing Dele, they were missing Son. So, you know, it wasn't like they had the full contingent of players, but I don't know. I mean, we know most transfers don't work out, so even with Lo Celso in there, not convinced that he's going to be able to do what Eriksen can do. So, Palmer, you know, I'd say if Eriksen goes, it is time to panic.
Don't there panic. Keep your hope at 10 out of 10.
Leicester City and Wolves draw 0-0 in the... This is like a 8th place 6-pointer.
Yeah.
These are two teams that are right in there, kind of in that Everton, top of the mid-table. Could be, you know, if you going back to, was it Pearson's email, who might squeak into top six?
Yeah.
Either of these two teams would be worth discussing in that conversation
for
also.
For sure.
And neither of them really get much going here. 0-0.
Yeah. And I think Wolves, they got to get their points now because Europa League is coming and that is going to be tough on them. Obviously, they're not a club like recently in the Europa League. We've seen some pretty big clubs from the Premier League who fall into the Europa League like Chelsea, United. Yeah. And then they're able to make really deep runs. Arsenal also. Those are deep clubs with much deeper pockets than Wolves. So it is going to really tax Wolves to have that many extra games. And I think Wolves will do okay in Europa League. They'll make the knockouts and they'll have more games. But it's going to hurt them in the Premier League playing every Thursday. So they got to get their points now. I think that this is a little bit of the future for them. They're very unlikely to replicate last year's form.
Arsenal go to Newcastle, get a 1-0 win. I saw some of this. They did not look good, I didn't think. They're also, like, I don't watch a lot of Newcastle, but Arsenal, they don't have a bunch of guys that I'm really impressed with, just like their, I don't know, cachet or resume, or like, they just don't feel like a big team to me anymore. Is that misplaced?
I mean, I think they're definitely in the second tier of the Premier League. They're not a City. They're not a Liverpool. They're not a Spurs even. But, you know, I think I would still be surprised if they didn't finish sixth place or higher.
Oh, for sure.
And I think, like, you know, Aubameyang is still an incredible player. And, you know, beyond that, I think you're probably right that they've got a bunch of guys who are good but not great, and, you know, who you wouldn't really expect to be starting on better teams.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're a step behind the, you know, West Hams and the Evertons, who definitely have a plan. But they're getting their plan together. I mean, I think Nicolas Pepe, I mean, I know he's a guy that obviously a lot of Arsenal fans are excited about, but just in general, they're still spending a lot of money. It's not like they're the Arsenal of the era of we got to pay for the Emirates Stadium and we can't spend money. So they're spending money, and now under Emery, I think you're starting to see a little bit of a plan. Do they have dead wood and missing spots and holes in the back because they have Mustafi and Koscielny wanted out and all this kind of stuff, and Socrates is a walking red card, and yes, there's problems for sure, and that keeps them being anywhere near the City and Liverpool tier. But I'm not convinced that they're necessarily like that bad. I think that they, to me, they're favorites for fourth, and they're closer to Spurs than they are to an Everton. So
I just think they're. Back line is so shaky,
yeah.
Which maybe isn't that different from United or Chelsea. But I think really the big difference is, I mean, they've got Torreira as a, you know, he looked good at times last year, but I just think they don't have a lot of bite in that team. And they, you know, it's kind of the classic Arsenal take is, you know, they can go forward. They can look really good in certain games and, you know, win 4-0 and play flowing soccer. But then, you know, when it really hits the fan, they're not tough enough. They don't have any leaders, things like that. So nothing about this team, you know, this year makes me think that's not true anymore.
Yeah. All this talk about their center backs and nobody's going to mention that David Luiz is coming in to shore it all up.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's at least David Luiz, not probably the one I would have picked to shore it all up, but seems like they got him at a good price, and they needed somebody because Koscielny forced his way out. So, you know, again, they seems like they're doing sensible things, right?
Yeah.
So I think there's reason for optimism from Arsenal, as long as you're not some of these gooners are, you know, nuts and think they should be top of the league or something. But as long as you take the long-term view, I think they're headed in the right direction.
Also, I can't believe you called Socrates a walking red card and you didn't mention Granit Xhaka, who is also a walking red card.
Yeah, absolutely true.
Can we take this moment, Mike? I have a question for you. I know how you feel about celebrating against your old teams. How do you feel about kit-related unveilings that may be disrespectful to previous teams? So I'm asking this because DC United's own Wayne Rooney was photographed with Derby County jerseys, which some people, I think, took exception to since he's still playing for DC currently. And then Koscielny, his unveiling was taking off his Arsenal jersey to reveal his wherever he went.
Bordeaux, I think.
The Bordeaux jersey underneath. And, you know, the Piers Morgan types thought that was very offensive. How do you feel about that?
I mean, pretty much default, if Piers Morgan doesn't like something, I think it's excellent. So, yes, yeah.
Exactly.
No problem with that whatsoever. Keep it up, Koscielny. It's not a problem. Quick trivia question for you guys. How old do you think Hector Bellerin is?
27. No, less.
I was going to say...
I'll take that on.
Yeah, I was going to say 25.
Yeah, 24, yeah. He's younger than I would have thought. That's all.
He is a great man. I really appreciate Hector Bellerin for who he is.
He has definitely vaulted up the players I like rankings a lot in the past few months.
Yeah, yeah.
It's too bad he plays for Arsenal.
Very much.
Pretty soon he'll be Manchester taking United. That shirt off and you'll see a Bordeaux one underneath the whole time.
Manchester United get a 4-0 win at home against Chelsea. This is kind of an interesting one. I think not a lot of people super excited about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at United. Kind of think maybe he wasn't the right long-term solution. On the flip side, Lampard coming in at Chelsea, people are pretty excited about him. Maybe not hopeful that they'll be excellent, but at least excited to have Lampard around. And then United just kind of take Chelsea apart. They don't look very organized at the back. Lukaku, United did not miss Lukaku. Kind of a funny result.
It was also funny because Chelsea hit the post twice in the first half. They, you know, for a big chunk of the first half looked like the better team. And then, you know, former Everton great Kurt Zouma, who to me looks like a man who just has too much energy when he plays. Like, he's just really kind of all over the place, gives up a silly penalty. And then kind of the rest of the game, you know, United is mostly just pushing forward. You know, Chelsea had a few moments. I think actually one of the times they hit the post was after that first goal. But it was, you know, a game that very easily could have been Chelsea up 2-0 within the first 15 minutes. But then kind of once United got settled, they really just bossed the game. And I will just say that Chelsea, I think Conte is coming back off an injury, but Chelsea started Jorginho and, who's it, Kovacic. And they should not do that again against the big team because those guys do not provide any meat in the middle of the field. And Chelsea was just getting absolutely run through all game.
Yeah, you had to feel like this wasn't, in some ways, this wasn't Chelsea's real starting lineup, which I don't know if you can blame Frank for that or not. But like you said, the center defensive mid pairing can't be their real center defensive mid pairing, if you ask me, or Frank has gone crazy. And then secondly, you have Ross Barkley playing on the wing, Everton Academy product Ross Barkley, So if he's played in the center all preseason, in the role that Mason Mount played. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt. Christian Pulisic is going to play in that left wing spot, and this Chelsea team is going to be different. I'm sure they learned a lot today and got humbled and good for United. But I don't think either side, United fans or Chelsea fans, should put as much, you know, faith in this result as 4-0 makes it seem.
So Pulisic did not get the start, even though we saw him pretty consistently through preseason. He looked like he was playing well. We thought he'd be part of that starting three just under the striker. Started on the bench. As you said, Mason Mount came in. I didn't actually hear what was based on. Was that just manager's decision? Why wasn't he in this?
I don't know. I mean, like Colin said, it's extra weird because they basically played someone out of position rather than having him start. So I don't know. It's only one game. Probably shouldn't read too much into it, but it was not encouraging for, you know, your Pulisic fans out there. And then he comes in and they give up three goals. You know, none really his fault, but not great. Not great timing.
Yeah, this is you know, the beginning maybe of the nightmare scenario for Pulisic at Chelsea is that he just can't get minutes. The minutes he does get don't go well, maybe for his fault or not. But, like, you know, managers are not that smart. So if they start making correlations with, like, well, I put him in and then this happened. So I agree it's too early to start worrying about it, but not the start that U.S. men's national team fans would have really hoped for here, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, luckily Chelsea is a club that's shown that, you know, if they get off to a bad start, they're able to, you know, to turn that ship around. You know, they're not going to drop to, you know, like a bottom of the table club. So I'm sure they'll figure it out.
They're very patient, very known for their patience.
they do have three, you know, should be winnable games in the next 3 weeks: Leicester, Norwich, and Sheffield United. So hopefully CP de God can start some of those and look good and help them get some wins.
Manchester United with the youngest starting 11 of the week in the Premier League. Their average age was under 25 years old. I love this for United. This is a United that I'm happy to watch.
Yeah, it feels like they've fully turned over the keys to Pogba at this point. Like, that's kind of my take on how they started and how they performed. And he looked pretty good, I thought. And I mean, for me, United are our favorites to finish in fourth.
Ooh,
very nice. Very nice. I like that. That is your Premier League. That's it. We'll have more next week. Anything else?
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Crickets. Dan.
Thanks, Cliff. Love you. Bye. Could be a lot of coughing for me today.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You're editing anyway, so go nuts.
Oy, oy, oy.
Oy, oy, oy.